So we're here at the Warren with a guest interviewer who's called?
Anthony Burbridge.
And we're going to talk to?
Heather Bagnall.
About?
About everybody's crazy or maybe it's just me.
Over to you.
Well, I suppose I'm a true punter in a way, in that I know very little, if nothing, about your show except the title that you just announced. So how would you sum it up for someone in my position, first of all?
Well, it's a show about a woman who is in crisis, and nobody notices, so she decides to hold an intervention for herself. We call it a choose-your-own intervention adventure. With props.
And props. That's interesting to me, because I also have a show with lots of props in. Are they? Do they feature a lot in this show? Are they very important?
Yes, they're quite limited, but they're pretty important. It's a humorous look, a comedic romp through mental illness, and it's really an attempt to demystify and destigmatize mental illness and miscarriage.
Now, our guest interviewer here is also here with the show, as you mentioned. Heather's here with a show in the Main Fringe, but also a show in the Free Fringe. Have you ever thought about taking not the Tale of the Cockatrice, which is award-winning, but also running something at maybe lower risk in terms of budget?
Well, if we're talking Free Fringe, we've looked into Edinburgh Free Fringe before, and we've been to see some acts that have made a bit of a killing just from being very good and very popular and taking a lot of money on the door on the way out. So, absolutely, we're definitely tempted to give it a go. Yeah, a lower risk, lower outlay sort of project that's just also that celebrates the mistakes that come with it as well and the sort of organic thing. Now, I'm sort of turning the interview onto you now. How do you feel about that?
Well, this is actually the first time that I have taken a show to the Free Fringe, though I've been to a number of Free Fringe shows. And one of the reasons that I wanted to put the show into the Free Fringe, it was twofold. One, it's a very low-tech show, so it easily fits into any venue. It was really written to be a site-specific performance in people's living rooms. So the idea is that I want to make it as accessible as possible and also as awkward as possible, because the audience really doesn't know what they're walking into. And if they're buying a ticket, they're kind of making a contract between the artist and the audience. Whereas when they're coming into a Free Fringe, they're really taking a risk.
Do you feel as if that might be a direction in which Fringe in general, I don't know how much you know about the UK Fringe scene, but do you feel as if that might be a direction that's going to become more popular as time goes on?
I don't know. The thing about Free Fringe is that there is a stigma to being part of the Free Fringe as well. The expectations are lower. But one of the reasons that I'm excited about being part of it is because just because the expectations are lower doesn't mean that the work that we do needs to be minimum expectation. So the more work that gets into the Free Fringe that is raising the bar on expectations, the more exciting the work becomes, the more we legitimize free work and audience taking that kind of a risk.
What's the most living room-like venue you've ever played with the Tale of the Cockatrice?
The Tale of the Cockatrice probably to date has been literally Katie Underhay, the other half of Mumblecrust, parents' living room. So, but other than that, we've got a date coming up in a school, which is like a 3x2 corridor, which I'm looking forward to. It's going to present some challenges. But yes, we have a literal living room on our venue list in the history of the show. What about yourselves with Everyone's Crazy, or maybe it's just me?
The most living room like space that I've been in. Well, I premiered this show actually in the New York SoloCom, which was a solo comedy festival. When I wrote it, I was attempting to challenge myself to write a pure comedy, because everything else that I've written has sort of been humorous drama. But I challenged myself to write a traditional comedy, and I knew that I wanted it to be about mental illness. However, the show that I set out to write did not get written, because I had I actually had a crisis in my life shortly before the festival, and ended up saying, you know, this is where my headspace is. This is, and wrote it into the show, and that's how sort of the element of miscarriage came into the show, which is why when I say it's meant to be done in a living room, like it really was meant to be performed in my own home, you know, inviting friends over and then going, guess what? You're part of a show.
And you've got another show, Falkland, on here, which is very different. How do you carry two shows so different at the same time in one Fringe?
Well, I think the great thing is because they are so different, they're night and day. And because Falkland is a two-hander, I'm able to give some of, you know, give some of the responsibility over to Luke, let him shoulder the weight of Falkland while I focus on Everybody's Crazy.
And that's Luke Tudball, who's also in that show, and Fringe Review have seen that. Could you ever imagine him touring two shows at the same time, especially puppetry?
That's the aim as far as Mumblecross Theatre are concerned. We'd like to have a repertoire, hopefully of smaller shows than we've got at the moment, so that we can just sort of bung in a car or van and go off and do as they are sort of requested. We've definitely looked into Free Fringe, and I suppose I have to toddle off now, so I have one last question, if I may. It's, would you, having dipped your toe into the water of Free Fringe, would you go back to The Other Way, or would you carry on and do more Free Fringe shows? Like, has this pointed a direction for you in any way in terms of how you want to go in the future?
That's a great question. I don't know that it's changed my direction, but I think it's broadened my direction a bit, because there are shows that I write that very specifically really need to be in a proper theater because they're much more technical, and with Free Fringe you don't necessarily know what you're going to get. But I do think that there is value in creating work that can occupy any space. Because I do think, in general, that is the direction that theater's going. It makes it more accessible, it makes it more affordable, and in some ways it makes it more exciting, because you're not giving the audience everything. They're bringing something to it as well.
I'm going to let our guest interviewer banish off to making more theatre, but thanks for that.
It's been lovely to meet you. Thank you, and have a lovely Fringe. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.
So what's on your list to get into your venue? Get a real flavour of Free Fringe here. You're going to walk into a venue that potentially has a lot of passing trade, but doesn't have a lot of lights.
Well, as I said, it was really meant to be in a living room, so all I need is a space to sit, a little table, and actually a bottle of wine and a glass.
Well, just to mention, though, there are so many bloody living room shows going on in Fringe now that they're actually dearer than The Warren. And how would you then stage that differently to the venue you're in? Just imagine you're getting in there then. I mean, would you claim it as a living room, as a theatre space?
I do actually claim it as a living room. I claim it as my home. You know, and if my home is in a pub, then that actually makes a lot of sense in the context of the show.
Yeah. And have you tested the material out yet, or is that going to be in your first Free Fringe show?
No, I have. I mean, I've tested the material in the U.S. This is the U.K. premiere. As I said, I wrote it for a festival in New York. So we did have a couple of performances in New York, and it was well received. It was quite unexpected.
Yeah, and the show that I saw, Falkland, very much has travelled across to the audience that was certainly there. Do you think you're going to get different reactions here? Because you've been in the UK a lot too. Do you think you know this audience?
In terms of this show, I suspect that I will get a more thoughtful audience necessarily than in the US. The US audiences tend to be quite vocal and ebullient, but UK audiences, by and large, are listening audiences, and they don't necessarily let you know how they're reacting to a show.
So they're not as participative, and you might have to do more.
Yes. Although, that being said, when I've gone to comedy shows in the UK, when the audience is sort of given permission to be vocal, they're usually pretty responsive.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to ask me?
No.
The perfect answer for a self-obsessed performer. That's good. So let's have an invitation to me and anyone here to come and see your show.
All right. Well, we are on...
No, I don't want to know when it's on. I want to know why we should come.
Why you should come.
We'll tell everyone where and when it's on.
Well, you should come because you're just going to have a good time, and it's going to question a lot of things that you think you know about mental illness and a lot of assumptions that people make about the people in their lives and the crises that they are in. It will change your perspective on the people around you.
Yeah, and I'll add also, mental illness, you know, is no longer a dark corner of conversation. It's very, very part of our culture in the world now. And so, of course, there's comedy, and of course, there's theatre, and of course, there are children's stories. So you're addressing us to come and see something not that's going to make us look away, but it's going to make us look normally. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair assessment. It's actually going to make people a lot more comfortable with where they are on that spectrum.
Heather Bagnall, thanks for talking to Fringe Review.